You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Graham Young and the one and only Martin O'Neill. Martin, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem, Daniel.
I say it's a special episode because, incredibly, it's been 20 years since Seville. Somehow, 20 years. It feels to me, someone said it was like 2 years ago. I believe it.
I agree. Years. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Just I don't know where the time has gone.
Does it feel like that to you though? I mean,
yeah, exactly the same. Yeah, Seville is like, I agree with you. Someone said to you, when did Seville happen? I would have said maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, we thought in this podcast we'd obviously look back on not just the Seville itself, but the run to the final.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we're not going to go through every single game, don't worry, but I thought we'd touch on obviously some of the... Cause amazing achievements to get there to the final. And some of the teams you played along the way were really incredibly tough.
Well, I think it it probably really started naturally having the disappointment of losing to Basel in the playoff game to get into the Champions League. And I think they went on to prove themselves a really decent side over the next couple of seasons as well too. But that's beside the point. I remember... in Basel, Chris Sutton in the last 2 minutes of the game, the shot looked as if it was going in, and suddenly I don't know what it hit, whether it was a tuft of grass or whatever, but it goes the other side of the post, and so we're out. But and I remember young Stylian Petrov saying, "Well, let's go and try and win the UEFA Cup," and really it kind of started from there. I think the big game was when we were drawn against Blackburn Rovers. The usual thing that comes up, Dan, is that we in the Scottish League are always compared unfavourably with the English League, and I understand that. You know, the money's there in the big league. Blackburn were flying high, but still not one of the top. They were about sixth or seventh. They had a really good season, and but still not considered one of the top. So we were immediately under pressure. Because it's Celtic, it's Scotland. We're representing Scotland as much as anything else, and that did. I remember this distinctly. That really was playing on my mind at the time. That I wanted Scottish football to be really thought of as really half decent, because we had a very good side, and so had Rangers, whom we were competing against. So then, when Blackburn come to Celtic Park, play really well in the game. In fact, we were second best for most of the evening. And then, of course, you will get all the critics saying, even though we scored a late goal to win the game, you'd have all the critics saying, well, there, we told you so. Yeah, Blackburn are only sixth or seventh in the league, and they're beating the top team in Scotland or playing superbly well against them. So the game at Ewood Park became of paramount importance to us, I felt. And I must admit, I know I've said this on a number of occasions, worth repeating, when the bus is it's kind of dark evening, bus pulls in into Ewood Park, but before that there's a pub on the left-hand side, and the Celtic crowd were out waving the bus on through, and then I felt then when we got to the stadium, the lads went out to do some warm up. I went out to have a look at the and then to see the end to my right hand side, absolutely packed with Celtic fans. And I thought, yeah, we'll not get beaten here today.
When Souness said after the first leg, the memorable quote about men against boys, that basically did your team talk for him, I'd imagine.
Very much so. Yeah. Well, in fairness, Graham has always denied that he had said this. It was one of the players. And of course, it was one of the players that said it. But the players wouldn't have said that there unless the manager had mentioned it. That's probably beside the point, really. But it was a big, big incentive. And sometimes you get these things that if there's a two-legged affair and something and some comments emanate from the other dressing room, it can actually fire you up. Now, sometimes it's overplayed like everything else, but this was definitely not overplayed. And the players reminded each other and reminded me of what was said. And so it was a team talk for us.
Yeah, absolutely. The next round, Celtic v Vigo. I couldn't believe this the other night, but it came back to mind. That took Celtic into the last stages of Europe beyond Christmas. It was the first time in 23 years.
Absolutely.
Remarkable to think about.
That is true. And that was the first, when we did that, and then we had big John Hartson's goal as well too there, which turned the tide for us, and it was terrific. And it was amazing because, I was told relatively quickly after that was the first time, as you say, in 20-odd years that Celtic had made it after Christmas into European football. So it was amazing. But the great thing about it was that after that was over, then you could allow yourself the Christmas, the New Year, not to think about European football again for a little while until it came round again, and then try and just concentrate on domestic things.
Arthur, the one question I wanted to ask you, there was a theory about European football at the time that you wanted to be home in the second leg, but that whole campaign was based on good results at home and this ability to go away. I think tied into the point Daniel made there about staying in Europe beyond Christmas, just really kind of gutsy away performances, Blackburn, Liverpool, even Stuttgart, 20 minutes in Stuttgart was just as good as football you see Celtic play in terms of goals. How did that work out in terms of, did you like the way the format, did the home game, winning at home or getting a good result at home, going away, did that help Celtic in that run to Seville?
Well, it did, Graham, but it wasn't by design, I must admit. You know, I would still have preferred the second game to be at Celtic Park, but it wasn't to be. And strangely enough, people keep thinking about our record in the Champions League at home is fantastic. And yet in this run to Seville, actually, it wasn't putrid, but it wasn't fantastic either. You know, when you consider that, you know, in later rounds, you're talking about Liverpool and then you're talking about Boa Vista and things like this here. So, no, it wasn't by design that we go out and try and get something going then. And no, we had to fight tooth and nail for that. And I think that probably, I can say this now, but perhaps maybe didn't really think about it then. But you know, when the fans talk about the run, I think they talk about the trips they've had to make. You know, the games that they've had to play and the matches in which they've had to sometimes endure. You know, as much as anything else. But the one we'll come to it later on. The round against the Germans, when we had done terrifically well at home. And then we'd scored a couple of goals early on and we were coasting and eventually hanging on in the game. I think that if we had lost that tie, honestly, you wouldn't have seen me for dust then after that. I would have been marched out of Parkhead, you know, with no fanfare at all.
The home leg, of course, was the game that Henrik Larsson, he'd injured his jaw.
That's right. Michel Maloney played for us, absolutely.
And Slovan.
Yeah.
I was going to ask just about that Stuttgart game in particular. As much as it was so much success in the run at the final. It wasn't without its moments, and beating a team of Stuttgart's class without Henrik Larsson. I think if I remember rightly, it was like back-to-back weeks as well. It wasn't like a big break. It was the one week for the first leg and second straight after, and 1-0 down as well at home without your talisman. Do you remember that as a moment with Sean Mooney stepping up? Just it seemed an electric night and everyone kind of came to the fore.
I absolutely agree with you, you know, because losing Henrik for, I think, about a month or something, I guess, here was obviously a big blow to lose Henrik in any given stage. And so we had to do without him. We realised we had to do without him. And then young Maloney comes up, steps up to the stage and performs like he had, like it wasn't any big deal. So that was really, really terrific, you know, to beat a team of that calibre in the manner in which we did do, even though, as I said, to the second leg, we scored early on, we get a couple of goals, we are absolutely electric in the opening half hour of the game. And then suddenly they get back into it, giving themselves a little bit of hope, but that should have been all. And then they score a few more goals. And of course you get into a bit of a worry in case this game, eventually, if someone was looking at the scorelines in both games, you would have thought that this was relatively straightforward task. But actually, it was never that, I must admit. And as we talk now, can you imagine, for instance, I was watching the highlights of the game last night, Sheffield Wednesday versus Peterborough. Oh. So Peterborough leading 4-0. So there's moments there when I see Darren Ferguson in the face, and I think I see my face etched in that there for a moment or two. But listen, we came through it, and that was the main news, you know.
I know that Stuttgart aren't the biggest name on this run in European football terms, but it's worth saying they came second only to Bayern that season. And Celta Vigo, fourth in La Liga. Liverpool, Blackburn in England's European spots. You know, Porto won the Champions League the next season. Liverpool, the year after that. I mean,
I sometimes, like everything else, there's certain things that are forgotten about. But that is forgotten. Yeah, they were very, 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 very strong. They had a good size. They had some really good players playing in the side, and they could break on you very, very quickly. You know, particularly when we were in the attack. But but the goals that we scored in the game would suggest that we must have been doing something reasonably okay.
When on you go, Graham.
On you go, Dan.
No. Just honestly, you go.
Just returning to Liverpool, you made a point there about the home and away and the Liverpool doubleheader and what it brought to Celtic. And it was obviously a phenomenal night at Parkhead, last and again, just back 2 minutes and scoring a goal. But I think, like different parts of that run, whether the injury lasts, and I think most would agree, the home leg, there was times you had to kind of, it was a to and fro, but there's times of weather in the storm as well. But you, going to Anfield, everyone talks about a great night in Celtic's history, one of the best ever, beating a mammoth name in European football. It was on BBC, it had all the elements of, but it all goes back, there's a point that keeps getting raised about your team talk before the game. And I think Henrik Larsson, I think, from quoted saying it's the best ever, or the one that's resonated with him the most. What do you remember? Do you remember the words that were in that speech, or did you have something pre-planned, or was it just the emotion of the night? And I think it left a mark in the players in the dressing room.
I did. Well, it's interesting because I met up with Henrik a few years ago, in fact, in Russia, when we were both working on the World Cup for a while. And then we met that other lad, Chris Sutton, and we went out and grabbed something to eat. So I mean it goes without saying for a start, and I'm digressing here, that both were just wonderful during my time at the football club. Henrik even before that there, but Sutton was I keep saying, even though I won't tell him this, but he was, I mentioned in the book, a landscape changer for us coming up there, you know, after Viduka had left the football club. But so your point about the games, I think that talking about Liverpool, I remember the atmosphere at Celtic being so amazing at the time, and the game started off like as if it was only going to be 10 minutes each way. So and we get the goal, and then Liverpool score. I think Heskey gets the equaliser or something like this here. And then it went into a wee bit of a lull for a while, you know, the game itself. But overall, sorry, Graham, I'm probably missing your point, and you can come back to it in a second or two. But I just that you talk about the team talk. Well, I'm going to conveniently say I don't remember anything about it now. And but it wasn't not pre-planned. I think it is definitely the emotion of the night, you know. And but it's I mean the players are facing Anfield. They're facing a very very good Liverpool side. So at some stage, you know, you've got to make these boys believe that they can actually do this, you know. And we had the players in the dressing room. They sometimes players need reminding of how good they are.
There was a moment that night as well, I remember. I think it was the first leg. Mike Alone threw it through Bobo Baldi's legs and just left him for dead. Mm-hmm. Just a reminder of the talent you were up against. Owen, Gerrard, Heskey, Carragher. As I say, they won the Champions League in 2005. I mean...
Absolutely, yeah. And it is amazing. Fun enough, I was speaking to Jamie Carragher less than a couple of weeks ago. Actually doing in the Sky Sports on a Monday night with him. And he was talking about these games as well too. So, and strange enough, considering that they were the vanquished team, vanquished side, he was talking with great fondness about those matches and the atmosphere that was created in both games.
Just to touch on Carragher there, Martin, just a question I wanted to ask. He made the point about the physicality of your teams, not just Celtic, but the Leicester team that you had great success with. I always remember a quote for Ronald de Boer as well, where I don't know if it was backhanded as if the open play wasn't good, but he said that Celtic were the best set-piece team in the world or Europe. Or that was a massive element of Celtic. And did you feel in that run, certain times football matches up certain ways, styles of teams in Europe, did you feel that physical advantage in your team matched up well with the teams you faced in Europe that season? Did that give Celtic, is that what ultimately helped Celtic towards the final? I know it wasn't a team short in skill, but in these big moments to go against Celta Vigo, Blackburn in the home leg, is that extra element, was that pivotal on the run to Seville?
Okay, Graham, well, there's a couple of things to that. Number one, set pieces are part of the game, and they are a major part of the game now. When someone scores a blinding free kick from 25 yards out and sticks the ball in the net, no one ever considers that a set piece. You know, it's actually, it's just a fantastic goal. Whereas corners are a different thing. Now, we were strong, we were good, brilliant coach in Steve Walford. And but yes, I had this at Leicester where I wanted players. You have to want it. It's all very well setting up people on a Friday morning. And everybody's nice and jovial, and yes, and yeah, we're looking forward to the game the following day. And then you find out that you put certain people into positions, and of course they'll head it fine for you on a Friday, and then duck out of it on a Saturday. Well, we didn't have too many in both Celtic and Leicester City that ducked out of headers. You wanted the best ones and the bravest boys who would go and head the ball. Henrik Larsson was as brave as a lion, so was Mjalby, so Baldy could head the ball as well too. So we had these players to do it, as I did at Leicester City. And that gives you a big psychological advantage over the others, the opposition, if they get kind of physically scared of you in that sense. But that's masking the ability that we possessed in the side. And I think sometimes these are that was a nice comment. You said Ronald de Boer said that about us. I'll take that comment, that compliment going. But we could play. We played with two wide players. You're talking about Didier Gat. You're talking about Alan Thompson, who certainly their entrance into Celtic, there's no question, helped Henrik Larsson score the number of goals that he did do, knowing that when Didier was going to go past somebody, he was going to whip the ball in. And as I've often heard the centre forwards talking now when they're doing punditry work, if you know that ball's coming in there, you can make that move as a centre forward. You can make that move knowing that it's there, that you know when someone's going to deliver the ball. So we had these things. We had ability in the middle of the field. You had Lennon who dictated matters. You had young Petrov and players like this here. Players who've gone on to prove themselves as really, really top quality players. And as you mentioned, Liverpool win the Champions League. And a couple of seasons later, Porto won the Champions League the year after with virtually the same side. I think that if we had And twice we were definitely unlucky. And I know now I look at these things and I say, oh, you make your own luck. Bobo Baldé handles the ball against Lyon in the last minute. We're through into the knockout stages of the competition. We do the same if we you know, the teams that we were playing in our group, were, you know, we had sides like Bayern Munich and teams like this year fighting Juventus. We were no doubt that we were absolutely robbed down in Juventus in the opening game. I have to say this now, and I think I'm saying it with some authority. We get into those knockout stages. I don't think anybody in European football would have wanted to come to Celtic Park to play. And I think you hear some of the Juventus players saying even now that the atmosphere that night and was sensational. So all of those things are etched in the memory. Unfortunately, you can't change things.
Martin, just you touched on there, it's something that I think has been debated in the past. I think that just to jump the season beyond Seville, you mentioned Bobo Baldé's handball against Lyon. But that season, 2003-2004, it was a bit of a change in the guard in the Champions League, and the four semi-finalists were Claudio Ranieri's Chelsea, Deportivo, Jose Mourinho's Porto, and now we've gone blank on
Monaco.
It felt a season, and as you touched upon, have you ever gone, I know some supporters in the past, did you look at that season maybe as you made the point, if you made the knockouts that year, could that have potentially been another run back-to-back? And I know you...
Absolutely. I, you know, watching the final, Porto, Monaco, I think, Monaco people would probably turn around and say, no, we would have beaten you. But you wouldn't have feared playing Monaco. Absolutely not. You wouldn't have. Not with the side that we possessed.
I think it's worth saying as well, just while we're on that season, that was obviously the year that you guys beat Barcelona.
Yep.
Not Barcelona out of Europe. And just, you know, we mentioned Porto in 2004 won the Champions League, Liverpool in 2005, Barca won it in 2006. So...
Well done. That is true. And I hadn't even thought about that there. And also, you know, as people, we forget. I forget myself sometimes that the following year after 2003, we're actually in the quarterfinals. We're beaten by a very good Villarreal side. And I must admit they were a fine side. And over the two legs, they deserved to beat us. But we were in the quarterfinals again of the UEFA Cup. So we kind of, to a certain extent, and please, take this similarity in the right way. It's funny that 1967 side, the Lisbon Lions, fantastic, absolutely. And suddenly it seems to be forgotten that they actually got to the final in 1970 again. You know, and you know, when I talk to older members like myself of a Celtic clan and talk about the 67 side, which is the best side that Celtic have ever had, no question, because they won the European Cup. And until that's won again, no one else can claim that. But 1970 side, having beaten Leeds United in the semi-final, I'm talking to two young lads who weren't even around at the time, but should have gone on to have beaten Feyenoord in the final and didn't do. And yet it's never talked about. You know?
I always remember my granddad saying to me, I said, did you go to Lisbon? He went, no, we just said we'd go to the next year's final. That's how they just, you know, that's the way it was back then.
Which was down at Wembley. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
see one point there as well. See, reflecting on talking about these European adventures, must be a real source of pride because your legacy at the club is knowing what you were able to do and winning trophies. But year on year, even the Bordeaux year in your first season, they were a good outfit. You were trying to take the league. A wonder goal puts you out. The next year, progress again. First year in the Champions League. Seville, as you make the point, quarterfinal, your fourth year. There was a really difficult group in your last, but consistently, every game, taking tremendous scalps or competing at a really high level. Is that a real source of pride looking back? It was more than just one season. It was every year. Celtic were a bona fide contender in Europe. Is that how you look at it now?
Graham, I do. Yeah, you know what? Overall, I don't think you worry too much about legacies. Legacies are whatever the case may be. I had a fantastic time at Celtic, I must admit. One thing I do, and if you think this is boasting, please take it in the right manner. My first European game for Celtic was a qualifying game against a team from Luxembourg.
Absolutely.
So a qualifying game for Celtic's Celtic's standing in Europe, you know, wasn't really that high, and I just wanted it to get back again to the sort of place that Celtic deserved to be. Okay, sorry, I'll rephrase that. No one deserves to be anywhere. You have to earn it. But where Celtic had been before, you've just mentioned, Daniel, 23 years since they'd last played a match after Wembley. And sometimes when I take this in the right manner as well. Sometimes when I hear Charlie Nicholas speaking, I feel as if Charlie has played in 5 consecutive European Cup finals for Celtic. While he was there, they never qualified for I'm not so sure that Charlie is actually primed to speak about European football after Christmas time. You know, I must admit. So listen, that's as it may be. But overall, yeah, I do, Graham, in a sense, I take a bit of pride at the fact, but at least greatly with a bit of disappointment in Seville, and eventually, obviously, to lose the game regardless, and disappointment that we didn't, you know. I honestly think that if we had reached the knockout stages of the Champions League with that team, that no side would have fancied coming to Celtic Park.
And obviously, we mentioned the Liverpool tie. When you get by them, Martin, I know it's a cliche, or we'll just take the next game as it comes, but you must have then been looking and thinking, we can win this. We can actually win this.
Of course. Absolutely, then. Absolutely. And strangely enough, you know, when Boa Vista was just a stuffy occasion in both. You know, when you have Larsson still in the field, you know, there's still a chance. And we got the goal, the big, big goal. And remarkably, and I think I'm right about this, but I think the other semi-final was Porto versus Lazio.
Yeah.
I wanted Lazio to go through. Not that I didn't know that much about Jose Mourinho, didn't really know that much about Porto at the time, knowing that Porto, who would have half a Brazilian colony playing for them anyway, you know, at some stage or another, would be very, very fine players. But I wanted Lazio because maybe Lazio with a bigger name and it's going down to Seville, and it was all of those things. As it turns out, Lazio would have been easier opposition, I must admit. But Porto tore them apart, and then Boa Vista became disappointed because they were thinking the Boa Vista versus Porto final would have been something. Anyway, I digress. I'm just saying that I probably wanted Lazio for the reason that Lazio would have been an appealing game, but eventually I think probably it would have been a less difficult opponent.
Do you think, just to you on the Boa Vista one, Martin? Do you think obviously a smaller side, they actually finished 10th that season. They put all their eggs in the UEFA Cup basket and really went for it.
Yeah.
Do you almost think your side, the kind of manner of the way you guys played and the kind of personalities, it would have been better suited playing a bigger name, a bigger team, you know, and rather than being the favourites, if that makes sense?
Oh, you mean against Boa Vista? Or you
against
mean
Boa Vista, yeah.
Against Boa Vista. Yeah, I think, you know, it's really interesting. I think after Liverpool, we were on such a high. We're such a high then that I think, I mean, I'm saying these things. I didn't think it at the time, but, you know, sometimes your memory plays a trick on you. But maybe there was a feeling early on in proceedings that, you know, if we've beaten Liverpool, we should be able to dispose of Boa Vista. And I can't really say that I felt that. But maybe at the back of the mind, maybe I became just a you know, little bit blasé about it, you know, the manner in which we beat Liverpool, perhaps. But it was a stuffy occasion, or two stuffy occasions anyway in the games, but we saw it through. The point I'm probably trying to make would have been a massive disappointment to have lost in the semi-final, having done what we had done so far up to then, and having beaten Liverpool, you know, at Anfield. That not to reach the final then against Porto, that would have been a major disappointment. And perhaps maybe in the way in people which talk about Seville now, about the run to it, it wouldn't have had the same impetus at all, you know, to have lost in the semi-final.
See, one point about the Boa Vista night, I think maybe reinforces what you said about breaking records of 23 years and so forth, and the fact that playing Boa Vista, it was light outside and Celtic were playing a European game. I think that was just all these novelties that you've got so far in the competition, and it's a lovely evening. And
that's true. Absolutely, very true. And it kind of, absolutely, Graham, and a really good point you make, because in my playing day, it reminded me of the series they did do, as you say, light outside, and particularly when, you know, with as we're based up in Glasgow, and I know you get a wee bit light for longer as well too, as I used to know in my summer days in Northern Ireland as a kid. And but really, it reminded me of the semi-final when I played for Nottingham Forest, semi-final against Cologne, the German champions at the time, way back in 1979. And where there was light for a period of the game as well too. And, you know, there's part of it like felt like almost like an afternoon game. But when the light faded and the dust had set down and then it became night within a minute or two, the atmosphere at Nottingham Forest that night was probably the most atmospheric game I have ever played in against Cologne in the semi-final of the European Cup, ever played in. 2-0 down after about 12 or 13 minutes, and we fight back to draw 3-3 in the game and then win out in Cologne. So, yes, just, you know, moments of that game against Boa Vista reminded me of the same thing about the semi-final against Cologne. Only because of the point you make about the light, you know, a bit of daytime.
I don't know what you think, Graham. We were teenagers at the time, Martin, but I remember amongst all my friends, and obviously we were just kids, but...
You boys look teenagers even now. So
don't know about that. But I remember me and all my friends saying, oh, beat Boa Vista. That's going to be the easiest game yet. That's going to be the easiest time. And it was the hardest time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. It turned out to be. But if you think about it, Dan, you must think, a team that has reached the semi-final, I mean, they can be beaten, all right, but they must have had something about themselves to get that far, you know. So I think there was an overall feeling that having beaten Liverpool, we should be able to beat Boa Vista because we don't know as much about Boa Vista. That was really it. And that, but I say that would have been a disappointment. I'm saying this now, and that's 20 odd years now, as you're talking about. But at the time, I don't think in my mind I underestimated Boa Vista, because the truth is this here. For my 5 years up there, I never underestimated any side in the league. You know, going away from home, going away to St. Johnstone, going away to St. Mirren. If you'd seen me before these matches, you would know that I wouldn't have been treating these games lightly, you know. So,
I always remember that Boa Vista goalie, Ricardo. Remember he saved Larson's penalty?
Yep.
In Euro 2004, he took his gloves off against England. I remember
Oh, well done, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
I just remember him being dead cocky, and I thought, we need to get a goal here. Just to shut him up, if anything else.
Yeah.
when you, obviously, you reached the final, you've just touched on it. As a player, you'd won two European Cups. As a manager, won a boatload with Celtic. But did nerves still play a part for you? Or you know?
Oh, of course. Of course, yeah. I mean, I think being a manager... listen, I thought it was always a good thing. As a player, I was always nervous before games. You know, seriously, always nervous. I think it was a good thing. Sometimes I think in my earlier time as a player, the nerves might have got the better of me to begin with. Once you start to settle down and you start, and then, you know, the sort of success that Nottingham Forest were having, and I became part of that team, I still became nervous before matches, but, you know, when the game started off, you know, you felt, listen, I can, the nervousness used to come early on is whether you could compete at that level. That was the concern. Remember when I came over, I was an amateur player playing for Distillery and being at university. So being a professional footballer, like almost overnight, became a different thing. So you're always concerned about whether you can cope with the level of football that you're playing at. And the teams that we were playing against, like Derby County, went on to win. Liverpool were a great side, but the best side in the league at that time were Leeds United. You know, they were fantastic football side, and had all great players, Giles, Bremner, that you could go through the whole team. And so that class, to try and get to that ability, that would be the thing that would make you nervous as much as anything else. But once we, as I said to you once, Brian Clough arrived and we got promotion and won the league, then things never became routine, but they became less nervous, or your nerves left you more easily, shall I say, during the course of matches. And then, and as a manager, it's much worse. It's worse. Yeah,
you don't have an influence, obviously, you're not in the pitch, so is that worse? Yeah,
you don't have an influence in the pitch, and that's why I feel that the team talks become so, so important. And they're not. They're, of course, you do your preparation before, and of course you do all of these things, and you get people during the course of the week, ready for the games mentally as much as anything else. But if they're physically in decent condition, then the power of the team talk beforehand is, to me, of paramount importance. It really has been, and it's been a thing, because these are the last words they're going to hear before stepping onto the field. Now they can go into a huddle and talk to each other, that's fine. But from a manager, and I think these things are important, particularly when you're dealing with, you know, really, really fine footballers.
For the Seville team, Top Martin, did you any special preparation? I imagine having a couple of weeks, it must have been kind of doing your head in a bit, you know.
I think that you're keeping an eye on results at domestic level, you know, because we're chasing Rangers down as well too. And I think there was a game on the Sunday. Please correct me, but if my memory plays me correct, that Rangers were playing on the Sunday before our game. I think we had traveled out. I think I might be right in the days. And of course, I spend my whole afternoon trying to worry about what's happening over there, because a draw will do us the world of good. And I think it might have been against Hearts. And yeah, I think Rangers scored some late goals, or certainly into the second half, and maybe scored a second goal. And this was our big hope, because I wanted to do at that stage, and goals were making a big difference. And I remember in one of the games that Jim Duffy allowed Dundee to play a game to give us an extra time to prepare. We did brilliantly in the match, but conceded a late goal. And I must admit, I was apoplectic in the dressing room.
Was it not something like 6-2 that game?
Yeah, it was. But the goal that we conceded at the end became so important. And I knew this at the time, but became so, so important in the reckoning, because it's a goal less that you have to try and find at Kilmarnock on the Sunday.
That's quite a vivid memory that night. It's, again, it was a Sunday night midweek, and you had the address to the players. I always remember it. It was this, we'll do everything we can. And well, that was your opening line, but this promise of, well, everyone knew that Celtic would do that. And I remember maybe Larson's face, a few players in the background, a feeling of, it's a big, everyone in the stands has got their sombreros on, Viva España.
Yeah.
So, everyone's playing in the, Viva España's playing sombreros, and that was the fine margins in that title race with Rangers. That's probably what makes Seville even more remarkable as well. It's in a dogfight, a title race. Everything's going the whole way. Having to come back in that, winning at Ibrox, pulling the points back from there, while at the same time going in UEFA Cup and all these. It was a remarkable achievement. And I think that sign off for support, I think that reinforces the point that the club was just a tidal wave of emotion heading into that game. As you make that point about keeping an eye on the Rangers scoring the Sunday, that night you could definitely tell that it wasn't just Seville in your mind. It's not just about this party. It was a mass try to win two trophies at once. It's when you look at it that way, it's an incredible effort for the players to try and do it.
It's true, Graham, absolutely. And it took me quite some hours. I became really sullen about the result, because I was hoping. And I know eventually you have to sort it out yourself, but just a couple of points to put it absolutely and utterly in our own hands. So if it had been a draw that day, then we can go to Kilmarnock and win the game and not worry about what's happening elsewhere. And but these are the things. That's why I've got the utmost regard for the players, because they come, they play in the conditions in Seville, you're into extra time, you lose a final, and there you are, and then you're having to come back on a Sunday, get yourself galvanised to try and score goals in a match. I've got the utmost regard for the players here, always have had, I must admit, but they were a really, really fine bunch. But again, as you say, you talk about a tide of emotion. I think that that's what Seville was eventually all about, almost like a culmination of that emotion throughout the course of the season. And of course, we ended up playing, I don't know, anything between 11 and 15 games more than Rangers at a really, really high level.
I was watching the opening to the Seville game last night, Martin, on YouTube, and BBC commentator Barry Davies, it just struck me that he said, Spain's never seen an invasion quite like this, mm-hmm. in regards to the Celtic fans. Were you guys aware of what was happening?
Well, first of all, you would know that Celtic fans would make their way. It doesn't matter whether that ground in Seville, by the way, the pitch was terrible, I must admit, but if that ground had held 4,000 people, and you would know that there would be, that Celtic fans would come to it, and regardless of where they're going to watch the game, they would be there. So in the couple of days beforehand, you know you're hearing noises from home about the people descending upon Seville, but you don't. I mean, we were outside it a little bit, but the trip in, you know, as we're trying to make our way through in the bus, then you could realize it. And you see just the sea of green and white. It's just it is almost indescribable, really. And it becomes emotional as well to you. There's no question about that. And then it becomes like almost like a burden, you know, in the sense that the people have arrived here. I'm quite sure a lot of people probably didn't really know that much about Porto. I'm not talking about Celtic fans not knowing and not realizing how good a good side they were. And, you know, coming for, as the lads would talk about, a party here, you know, to win. It's nice to hear, whether it's true or not, it's nice to hear fans still say the people who, Seville was a great, really great occasion. Obviously, lads, it was, in one sense for me, but in another sense of massive disappointment. What a night it would have been if we had won 3-2 rather than the other way around. And for someone like Larsson, who playing in the manner in which he did, I mean, among some of the great games that he played, this was almost unsurpassable.
You touched upon it there, Martin, about the quality of Porto. And obviously Celtic were an extremely high-level team as well. When did that first, you obviously knew the Lazio result, but was this in the pre-match prep? See, when you were watching Porto before the final, were mm-hmm. you left impressed by what they were able to do? Was it quite clear they were a team of distinction?
Of course, you knew that. You knew the players could play. They were terrific footballers. They swept Lazio aside with no real problem. I, not for one moment, did I know a great deal about Jose Mourinho at the time. But they did, and you could see this even in some of their games. Their time wasting when they get in front was, you know, that like a masterclass in many aspects. And so those are the things you had to worry about: players going down so easily, great players going down the minute they're touched, they're down for free kicks and things like this here. And I mean, it's absolutely prevalent now in the Premier League at the moment, and it's not just from foreign players, you know. The British players are going down now, which is learning a lesson or two. But yeah, overall, you could tell that they were class side. Yes, we knew how good Porto were, how skillful they were as a side. But you cannot be thinking, you impart that knowledge, and the players would have seen this here. But you still have to not be going in with any inferiority complex to the game. And that was the point. I always felt that we could win the match.
Well, you mentioned Jose Mourinho. What was he like to deal with, and did you have many dealings with him?
I went to Aston Villa. Yeah, the evening of the game in Seville after they had won, and he was coming over, and I was really annoyed by their tactics and their antics during the course of the game, and I tried to display that, but then sometimes you feel as if, well, that's just like. That's, you know, what shall I say, like almost like a poor loser from that viewpoint. But if the world ended today, Jose is one of the great managers in the game. His record is fantastic. What he did with Porto was great. Then went on to Chelsea, did wonderfully well, signed some really good players, and competing with Manchester United at the time. And then wins the Champions League with Inter as well too, I think, at the time. Although Barcelona, if you remember, I think it was in the semi-finals, Barcelona had to make about a trip over the trip. I think that Hannibal, I think, would have been more used to having a trip over the Alps or something like this here. Do you remember there were strikes or flights and they had to take buses? So by the time that Messi and the lads had arrived down in Milan, I think they were I think they'd done about 27 hours in a coach. You know, that doesn't help. But anyway, overall, Jose's terrific manager, really good manager, no question about it.
Just did he come into the dressing room after, Martin? Did he offer you like commiserations or anything like that?
No, that wasn't something that people did. It's more like a British thing of managers coming in, and you've got a little bit of time. But after a European final, you wouldn't have time. And had we won, I wouldn't have been seeing him after the match. You've got your own things to do, and that wasn't something that. I mean, Arsene Wenger never did it. Never went into rooms. Alex Ferguson was always win or lose, generally winning. He would come into the room or have a drink afterwards in the match. But for a European final, you're no matter who it would have been, you would be unlikely to see the manager afterwards. You know,
Martin, I feel like I could talk to you all day about this, but I'm aware we have to let you go at some point. But I think it's just worth summing up to say that obviously Celtic didn't win the trophy, but it's still an iconic season, and you and the players gave Celtic fans a season, a night that they'll never ever forget. You know, regardless of where the trophy went, and I think that's, you know, to be proud of rather than.
Yes, Daniel. I suppose it's the old thing. I never forget when I started out in football management, my two daughters, who had never seen me play, you know, by the time that they arrived in this earth, my footballing career was over. And they always felt that, winning, if you won the game on a Saturday, life is much easier in the O'Neill household, you know. So, and my daughter, who was 11 years of age, and I'm at Wycombe Wanderers at the time, used to come out as I was leaving the home to go to the games, home or away. She used to shout and come out to the car and wind down the window and say, "Dad, just win," and you have to do that, man. You have to win the games, and that's a major disappointment. But it is lovely to hear Celtic fans, almost to a man, saying that they, you know, the ones who went to Seville had the time of their lives. It was a really, really fantastic journey, and I think they probably meant the whole journey, almost from the start. The Blackburn Rovers, the Liverpool, the Stuttgart, you said, the Celta Vigo one, and all of those games, and even the stodginess of Boa Vista, but all of that there. So from that viewpoint, it was terrific. Wouldn't have been fantastic just to have won, to have had a European trophy alongside the ones that Jock Steen had won? That, you know, so it wasn't to be. But of the side, I'm extremely proud of the team. I think they were a great bunch. They had a real fighting spirit about them. In fact, sometimes in the dressing room at half-time in matches, the hardest part of my job was quelling them, you know, really. Sometimes, and that's when we were winning, you know. Yeah. So you can imagine what it'd be like beforehand.